Welcome to the Underground, the Steel City Underground, the black and gold standard for Pittsburgh Steelers coverage. Now, here's your host, Brian E. Roach.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Steel City Underground podcast. My name is Brian E. Roach, the host who, as you know, doesn't like toast. And we are happy and lucky to bring you a special edition of the podcast today. And our special guest to join us for that is the author of the book, A Different Way to Win, Mr. Jim Rooney. Jim, welcome to the Steel City Underground podcast.
Brian, it's great to be here. I enjoy listening, and you always love the chance to talk to Steeler fans.
Absolutely. Same for us. You know, we get any chance to do this, and we kind of feel extra privileged because, you know, this is kind of like Steelers royalty here.
Well, it's like I said, it's good to talk to you, and any chance we can talk to the fans is a good thing.
Awesome. All right. So I've had a chance to, start to read through the book. It looks like a really, you know, interesting read, covers a lot of stuff about your dad. And, you know, from what I've seen, the book is broken into essentially four stories or parts where, you know, you've titled it Steward, Architect, Peacemaker, and Vocation. That first Steward being titled Faith, Family, and Football. And, you know, what, you know, we've, as Steeler fans, we've all, you know, we've seen the documentaries, we've read a lot of things. But in the context of your father, what did those three things mean to him?
Right. So, you know, I think my father was you know, very much a man of his principles. You know, one of them was respect. And so I talked to people, I spoke to people of several different faiths. And the thing they always talked about my father is how impressed they were with how strong, you know, his belief in his own faith was, but how much he never tried to judge other people for their faith. And in fact, you know, he saw any type of faith as an act, you know, it was about your actions. And Jeff Pash, who is Jewish, you know, was his sort of partner on building the Rooney Rule, and they constructed this together. And Jeff Pash is the NFL's chief attorney. And so we talked about, you know, this idea of faith and how my father had this great conviction, but how he really liked working with people who were trying to bring good in the world, no matter what faith they came from. And so from the faith standpoint, you know, I really appreciated that, you know, others who had different experiences than him, you know, spoke to that in a way that really showed that fundamental respect and how that drove him, but how he used it as something that brought people together rather than divided people.
Yeah, that's,
so that's faith. So go ahead. Sorry.
Like I said, that's a great message. And certainly one, I can get by, and I'm pretty well known for saying, that we have, you know, we're one race, one blood, and our beliefs are our beliefs. But if we can get past that and understand that it's humanity, we'd all be in a better place. And that sounds like something your father could get behind.
That's how he lived, very, very much. And it was cool to hear, you know, I knew that's how he lived. It was really impressive to hear other people speak about how he took that into significant actions. I know we're not going to talk a lot about Ireland, but one quick piece, since we're talking about the faith, family, football side, is when he went to Ireland, Ireland had grown from the 70s, where I think you had a very small Muslim population. When he became ambassador, it was around 17% of the population in the capital city of Dublin. And he hosted these interfaith luncheons, and folks just talked about how different that was, that he was bringing these communities together you know, there had been some divide and certainly some just lack of connection with each other. And that was, you know, it was Dan Rooney, this old, you know, guy who was 78 years old, who was really doing this work of bringing different points of view together in this way. So it was another story that was great to gather during the process of putting the book together.
Very, very. I mean, to me, that's it's just a tremendous aspect of him. What about family and football?
Yeah, so family, well, it's funny because, you know, we said faith, family, football, and if you talk to the Rooneys, you know, the Maras with the Giants or the Hallises slash McCaskies with the Bears, we all sort of make that statement a lot. And the joke is, you know, which is the most important? you know, it should be faith, family, then football, but I think in the fall, it sometimes, you know, those priorities get switched a little bit. So, you know, we come from one of these big families, and you know, there's that sense of we have a degree of competitiveness with each other. One of the fun stories that is, it's not quite in the book. I tell pieces of it, but I get to talk about a lot is you know, there was always this competitiveness between fathers and sons in our family. And so, you know, my father and Chuck Knoll, I don't like to use this word, but you know, bordered on hate of Al Davis, you know, of the Raiders. but my grandfather talked to Al Davis every week. They had a great relationship, and he would almost tease my father and Chuck and was sort of pushing them to you know, giving it to them, if you will.
Yep.
Well, my father turns around and has this great relationship with John Harbaugh. John Harbaugh was one of my father's favorite people in the NFL, but he always made sure he went over and gave him a hug and shook his hand before the game when Mike Tomlin, Kevin Colbert, or my brother Art was looking on to make sure he was sort of teasing them because, you know, that's their big competitor. So
right.
That's a tradition in our family, sort of that getting on each other's back. But then there's that side, you know, if we're in a fight, you know, we all have each other's back.
Absolutely. Now, the second part of this book is entitled Architect, and that's more about building the 70 Steelers. And something I've said many times, and I repeat, is that to me, one of the most influential people, if not the most influential person in Steelers history and in building that dynasty is your father, Dan Rooney. And while that's not to discount him, you know, the chief or anybody else, it just feels like his fingerprints were always all over that. So one of the questions I have for you is whether that's an accurate statement in your mind or am I missing something?
Well, no, I think I think anyone that was there or saw it would absolutely say, look, the keystone from an architectural standpoint was my father. Now, my grandfather was a phenomenal promoter and had that just tremendous ability to build relationships. And I think he helped my father with that. I don't think it was as natural to my father, the relationship side, but he got better and better at it. But he had that, he set that groundwork, but he wasn't an operator. You know, he didn't know how many Pepsis were in every concession stand at the end of a game, where my father could tell you exactly, you know, how much we sold at each concession stand, could tell you every play that was run, and could tell you, you know, who was writing a good story and who was writing a bad story. My father understood every aspect of the operation. He had a very clear business plan in his credenza. And what he did is he was, you know, an orchestra conductor, if you will, from a management standpoint. He didn't tell, you know, the cello each note to play, but he was making sure that everyone was coming together, whether it was Coach Knoll, whether it was Bill Nunn, whether it was Joe Gordon, our PR director back then. You know, he brought this great management team together. He didn't micromanage them, but he made sure that they were all, you know, if you will, singing the same tune. And so from a vision and architect standpoint, you know, my father was the most critical piece, I think, in anyone's objective estimation. Now, Chuck, I think, was the most important piece in terms of execution and putting this great team together and then making sure they played the way they did. So I never want to overshadow Coach Knoll's contribution, but you know, my father brought him in because he felt like he would be aligned with that vision. And the two of them just worked so hard together, and that's part of the story we tell, as well as a few others. So you know, but I think your question is, you know, is calling him the architect accurate, and I would certainly take that position.
Absolutely. Now, you mentioned Bill Nunn. And Bill Nunn is a favorite hot topic in the SCU back rooms, because most of the guys are a bit younger than I am, so they don't remember you know, the heyday. They didn't watch the '70s Steelers or, you know, even the late '60s Steelers. But I have that background, and so I'm very well aware of Bill Nunn. And so one of my questions for you is, as you relate to him, I mean, how important was Bill Nunn to that team? And as I often say to everybody who will listen, do you think he should be in the Hall of Fame?
Well, so let me answer your question in reverse. He should absolutely be in the Hall of Fame. His contribution, not only to the Steelers, but to the entire NFL and all of football, you know, really is second to none when it comes to diversity, when it comes to expanding, you know, the pool of talent, and understanding this underrepresented group prior to his arrival. So you know, Bill Nunn deserves to be in the Hall of Fame as much as anyone who ever, you know, threw a pass or kicked a ball, etc. In terms of you know what he did, so my father was, and we get into this, you know, he was just very influenced by, you know, the civil rights movement of the 1960s, and felt like, you know, he had an obligation to do something. So he brings Bill in, and Bill was critical of the Steelers, and they had this lunch, and by the end of the lunch, you know, my father hired Bill sort of on the spot, if you will, and Bill comes in, and from 69 to 76, the Steelers draft more players from the historically black colleges and universities, the HBCUs, than any other team. In fact, we doubled the league average of HBCU players. And, you know, those guys go on. Not only do you have, you know, Stallworth and Blunt, who go to the Hall of Fame, and Shell, Donnie Shell, who should be, but you have guys like Ernie Holmes and so many guys who were sort of the cement between the bricks that made that team good, and then you had the great players make it great, but they were such a foundational piece to who we were. And then Bill also had this tremendous ability as a leader. You know, we talk about diversity, the other side the conversation is inclusion, of really being able to communicate that both Chuck and my father were authentic, that they weren't just talking the talk about these issues, but they were walking the walk, that you know, Chuck Knoll, you know, would eventually name Joe Gilliam as the starting quarterback before the season in 74, which is the first time that happened. Mm-hmm. And that showed these guys a sense of trust that, look, these guys, you know, no matter where they came from, were competitive. And they didn't want something given to them, but they didn't want some sort of artificial obstacle in their way. And Bill really communicated that, look, that's what Dan Rooney and Chuck Knoll are all about. And it became very important in the conversations I had with the guys that came from these schools, that it was believable that you know, this was going to happen, and they would have, you know, an honest opportunity with the Steelers. And then you saw what happened, that not only was this sort of altruistic or the right thing to do, but it gave us a competitive advantage. We were better than everyone else, and we were better than them because we were doing something they weren't doing in terms of the talent pools that we were going to. And Bill was the guy that was executing that vision in, you know, going to these schools that were so unique.
Yep. What do you think the chances are that he gets in?
I don't know. I don't know how to handicap that. I don't know is if Ed Bouchette is still our sort of the Pittsburgh vote. Ed is someone I think who I have tremendous respect for and knows that story. But you know, you have it's always very competitive. So I don't really know what the voting constituency looks like. But there's no question if you study the you know, the contribution that Bill made, that it is unique and it is significant.
Yeah. So you talked a little bit, and I've heard you talk about the relationship with the fans, between the Steelers and the fans. And that's, in many ways, that feels like a unique relationship within the NFL. And from my standpoint, I was lucky enough to meet your father twice. And I was always struck by how present he was in whatever conversation he was having and with whoever he was having it with. And it felt very much to me like, you know, at that time when I was having, you know, whatever the 2 or 3 minute conversation was that I got to have with him, that, you know, that was his focus. And that's not always the case when you meet people that, you know, are of that stature or, you know, have reached that level of celebrity. And so it's always interesting to me because I've talked to other fans who've had similar experiences and have said the same thing. And all that has struck me as there's a unique relationship between the Steelers organization and how they view the fans and what the fans mean to them. So, as I said, I've heard you talk about it before, but I'd like you to elaborate a little on that.
Well, and another person that has to be included in that is Joe Gordon, who you know ran our PR department. When I watched the games this season in Arizona and California, and we had 40,000, and basically the whole 15,000 plus seat stadium in Los Angeles. You know, that goes back to what my Joe and my father were conscientious about. They didn't see it as you know a situation where perception is reality. They felt your reality would become your perception, which is not how people think from a marketing standpoint. But they knew that people in Pittsburgh, they're both from Pittsburgh. They knew that people in Pittsburgh are tough, but they're also kind. And it's you know an idea that did we represent what or do we represent, you know, what those ethoses, what those mores, what those beliefs are for the people in Western Pennsylvania. And it wasn't about trying to convince them that we were something. It was trying to be, and with Chuck Knoll, I think it was there. Were we what they, you know, how they lived their lives, and did we represent that in a meaningful way? And then communicating that to them, whether it was directly, through, like you said, presence and engagement, or through building authentic relationships in the media and building a level of communication that folks felt they were being treated fairly with respect, that we were speaking from a standpoint of truth, and sort of always doing that. And Joe Gordon, who ran the communications back then, and my father, you know, were very conscientious that's what we were about. It wasn't about a brand that was strategically made sense. It was a brand that was authentic. And certainly the most fundamental piece of that is you know, understanding that this is what folks from Pittsburgh are all about, that they have this toughness, but they also have this kindness, and hopefully we were meeting that.
Gotcha. So to talk about the Steelers, especially, you know, as you go back, the Steelers' primary rival for many, many years, I mean, minus, you know, the Raiders, but in division would have been the Browns. And, of course, there was that period of time when the Browns departed and became the Ravens. And I know your father was instrumental in making sure that a team came back to Cleveland. But how much so was he involved in that?
Well, so, and that's a big part of the book. I don't know. It's a chapter in the book that we talk about. You know, interestingly, you know, my father ran the NFL's labor negotiations. He was the, you know, management, and we talk a lot about that. But Art Modell ran the television, and there had to be a lot of interplay between them, and that labor wanted to know how much money the teams were going to make, and television wanted to know that there weren't going to be strikes and that they could put the games on TV. So my father and Art Modell had a fantastic relationship. But when he said he was going to leave Cleveland, my father said, "Look, I'm for Cleveland." And it caused a big rift in this important friendship to him. But, you know, he felt like we can't do this to towns like Cleveland that are so similar to Pittsburgh. You can't just up and leave there. And look, I know that Art was trying to get a stadium deal, and it's a difficult thing. But at the end of the day, my father felt the fans of Cleveland, you know, were like Steeler fans, are great fans. And he, you know, he stood up and said, "We're not going to do this." So then he became the owner, which you needed. You know, Commissioner Taglib, who believed that Cleveland was important, but he knew he needed someone in the owner's room to keep a project like this going. And the league official who became important on the ground, who was running this project, was a guy named Roger Goodell. And so Roger sort of dealt with the day-to-day project management, and my father was sort of the vision and the voice behind bringing the Browns back until Al Lerner, you know, became the owner who would finalize it. But it was my father who talked to the officials in Cleveland and in Ohio in terms of getting the stadium deal done, that eventually they said, "Look, you're going to need a stadium." In terms of saving the name and colors of the Browns, which I had commented many times to my father, you know, this might be a good chance to change those colors, but they kept them anyway. So, but he was certainly played a crucial leadership role, and Roger Goodell, that's sort of where he cut his teeth in terms of a big, hard project for the league. And there's no question in my mind that there wouldn't be NFL football in Cleveland if it wasn't for my father.
Gotcha. Now, I'm going to switch to a different gear. Most Steelers fans know about the kind of unique and special relationship that existed between Ike Taylor and your dad. I guess the question is how unique is that, or is that, you know, there's lots of legends about, you know, the familiarity between ownership and players amongst the Steelers, especially going back, you know, with the Chief. But how commonplace is that kind of a relationship in the Steelers organization?
Well, look, I think you have to be who you are. I think my grandfather had great relationships with players because he was a great baseball player and a boxer. So he, for the first 25 years of the team, he was equal to, or not, if not better, athlete than many of those guys. So there was that had existed. My father grew up around those guys and was a pretty good high school quarterback. Now, he played a little bit at Duquesne, but never was beyond that. But growing up around those guys, he understood the who they were and the sacrifices they were making and the commitment they were making as players. So, from before Joe Green, but certainly Joe Green talks about, and Joe Green did the foreword in the book, talks about, the role my father had as a mentor to him and somewhat of a father figure. And going another, 30 years beyond that, you had guys like Ike Taylor and, Casey Hampton. Casey and my dad had a great, great relationship. And, you have a young 300-plus-pound African-American kid from Texas and this older white guy from Pennsylvania. You couldn't have two more different characters on paper, but I think it was this idea of authenticity, and I know that word gets thrown around a lot now, but they both were who they were, and it's why I think they got along, is that there weren't airs. They weren't pretending to be something. And Casey just loved sitting down and talking with my father because he knew he was going to be straight with him and Casey could be straight back. And it was sort of an odd couple, but there's some great photos of the two of them next to each other, just laughing and talking. But that was who they were. My brother has some great relationships, but his personality is different than my father's was, and different than, my grandfather, my father, my brother all have different relationships. But I think if you're true to yourself, players and good players, I think, are true to themselves, those type of guys. They're comfortable with each other, even though their backgrounds might be so different. So, I think that's why these guys have good relationships, is because I think all three of those guys are pretty straight shooters and players like that. So it works. The other side is, look, you do have a little bit of an advantage. Well, you certainly have an advantage because your name's on their paycheck and everyone wants to have a good relationship there. But the other side is, you're not the coach or nowadays the general manager, so you're not their boss. So yes, we're overseeing it, but, it is a little bit different relationship there, and that allows some things to work within that. I don't want to pretend that's not part of it too. It gives them some space to have a relationship that might be different than a direct boss.
Gotcha. Staying on the topic of players, I feel like I'd be remiss if I did not ask a question about how your father would view some of the things that are going on nowadays, especially with, I don't want to single any one player out, but there's kind of this come get me attitude when players went out of a specific city or out of a contract. Certainly, there's been drama with the Steelers at the beginning of the year. How would he react, or how would he view this kind of a different model from players about trying to assert their freedoms, I guess?
Well, I don't think he would look at it like that, and I think he would think that some of this is games being played by agents, and my father wouldn't – I don't think he'd get caught by – those games. I think he would be tough. I think my brother has tried to be straightforward with these guys. I think, look, if someone, you know, if there's a you're at a point where someone is going to be a distraction to the team, you find a way to manage that. You know, so from that standpoint, I don't think he would be, you know, my father wasn't afraid of tough contract negotiations at any point in his life. So I don't think he would have been, you know, the other side I would say though, is he always had a deep respect for players. You know, there's a great story we touch on in the book, but he told it even, you know, you can only get so much in a book. Mel Blount talks about, you know, back in 77, I believe it was, you know, he had this big negotiation, and it was somewhat acrimonious with my father, and it happened to be the you know, right when it ended, the summer that he opened the first Mel Blount youth home in Georgia. And he said, you know, the first two people there down this, you know, as he said, a back road in the middle of nowhere in Georgia were my father and Chuck Knoll. And he said that really taught him who they were when they were in this battle all summer long about money, but when it came time to, you know, be involved in something that was so meaningful as the Mel Blount Youth Home, that those were the two guys who were there. And so I think you can do both. I think you can understand that there's a business aspect to this, and my father wasn't going to get played by players, but that the relationships were meaningful when they were genuine. And I think that was the balance he struck that was so good to these guys.
That sounds exactly like what I would have expected. So when we look at the Steelers as they stand right now, with the season going the way it's gone, it's been a very tough process. What is your take on the job that they've done, you know, to get to where they've gotten through all of the obstacles they've had to fight through? You know, very few teams tend to have success when a franchise quarterback goes down. But the Steelers have persevered. And so, you know, how do you view this season?
Well, I've teased Mike Tomlin and Kevin Colbert and said, look, the good news is I believe you guys, you know, you guys talk about my father being your mentor, and this is a perfect example. You didn't panic. You know, these were the type of things that he would talk about, is you don't get concerned about, you know, we have great respect for the media, but you don't let them make decisions for you. And, you know, we didn't panic when it was a tough off season, and you know, we don't panic when you know, a great player like Ben gets hurt, so that they follow through. But I said, look, the book was coming out anyway, so if you would have had a bad year, I would have said you didn't listen to my father. So and we all had a good laugh about that. But no, I think that you know, there are stories and even more stories that didn't make the book about the times that my father just loved sitting down, and usually in Kevin's office. Sometimes it was Mike, sometimes it was my brother Art. But having all three of those guys together, my father would just sit there and observe them, or might have been on the phone while he was in Ireland. But the three of them sort of transitioning from him to them taking over the Steelers, and the moments that they all talked about, just loving having him in the room, sort of observe them, take the process over, and he might give them just a little piece of advice or a little piece of wisdom. But then at some point he would just get up and walk out, and they felt like, oh, yeah, we must be doing something right, because he's let us take this over. And, you know, I think this year is just a great example, the work that Mike's done, the work that Kevin's done. You know, the work that my brother's done, I think it exemplifies who my father is, that you don't panic, and tough things are going to come your way, and you don't back down from them. And you know, whatever happens the rest of the season, in my mind, you know, being able to respond to, you know, a whole bunch of things, a really tough off season, a huge injury to Hall of Famer like Ben Roethlisberger, you know, trading for Minka when everyone would have thought it makes no sense, to losing Stephon Tuitt, all of those things, and then having guys on the field. My son, who's a huge, huge fan, lives in Denver, texts me, you know, 4 weeks ago, who's Kareth White, you know? So, you know, the job that they've done is a credit to them and who they are. But I also feel, you know, my father's spirit certainly is a mentor to all three of them behind this season.
Absolutely. Well, again, the book is A Different Way to Win. The author is Jim Rooney. Jim, we greatly appreciate your time. I think the book is available pretty much anywhere you buy books, right?
Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Steelershop.com, and then we have a great partnership with Giant Eagle. They've been a great friend throughout this project. So go to any of those places, but if you have a chance to go to Giant Eagle, I'd love to see folks go there.
Absolutely. So if you're in Pittsburgh or near Giant Eagle, pick it up there. It's a great Christmas gift. You know, should be a part of any Steelers library. Jim, I just want to take one more minute to thank you for joining us. We appreciate the insight. You know, go Steelers, right?
Great to be on with you, and we need you and all our fans to push us through these next two games.
Absolutely.
And then hopefully three or four more after that.
That's right. I keep telling everybody that with this defense, man, they got
anything
a chance in every game.
Yep, for sure.
All right, Jim.
Great to talk. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you again. For everybody else, that's going to wrap it up on this edition of the Steel City Underground Podcast. Remember, again, to like, subscribe, and we'd love to hear your comments. So, as I like to say, it's chaos out there, so be kind.
We would like to thank you for listening and remind our listeners to follow us on social media and our website, www.steelcityunderground.com.